All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about Top Gun Maverick, the long awaited sequel to Top Gun starring Tom Cruise. And man, was it a lot of fun. It was also a lot of fun to talk about it. And joining me today is Darren Lundberg from NostalgiaCast. And yeah, we have a great conversation, lots of good puzzle pieces. So that's coming up in a second. Before we get to it, I want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. If you like what we do here on the show, you can rate and review us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, Pocket Casts. If there happens to be a five-star button, we would appreciate it if you hit that five-star button. And make sure you're subscribed while you're at it. And you can also follow us on social media at PiecingPod over on Twitter or Instagram. And check out our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And last but not least, don't forget we do have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, Awesome Movie Year, and from my music career. There's a lot of advanced Piecing It Together episodes on there right now. This might be the most we've ever had at one time, so check it out. Patreon.com/bydavidrosen. So I'm really excited to talk about Top Gun Maverick, because right now it's probably my number one movie of the year. So let's talk about Top Gun Maverick. All right, Darren Lundberg from NostalgiaCast is joining us to talk about a movie filled with nostalgia. We're talking about Top Gun Maverick. Darren, how's it going?
It's going fine, David. How are you doing?
I'm great. This has been like a marathon of podcasting the last like five straight days. I'm going on a little trip after this recording, and like, man, I'm exhausted, but I'm so excited to talk about this movie. I'm pretty sure you liked it a lot. Loved it. I'm super excited to talk about it. Before we get to it, though, it's your first time on the show, so why don't you tell people a little about you and your podcast?
Okay, well, again, it's an honor, David. I've been listening to Piecing It Together for a long time. I think I had you on. Like, it was an honor having you on our show, Nostalgia.
It was a fun time.
Yeah, and we chatted about Little Shop of Horrors, which is, that's usually what we do. We take movies from our childhood or movies that we haven't seen since our childhood, and we rewatch them just to see how they look, you know, whether it's not through rose-colored lenses or, you know, when you're not caught up in the hype of it at the time, to see, you know, if they stand the test of time, if it's a movie that needs to be remade or if it's worth that nostalgia. Top Gun is definitely something that we'll talk about, nostalgia that you already mentioned.
But, sure.
So it's just been, it's fun. Like, me and my partner, Johnny, we just talk about these, like, we grew up together and we bonded over 90s movies and we shot everything together. So just being able to revisit those as, you know, as a team, like, that's been really big. We've had like a lot of really great guests, including yourself. So it's been really like, I don't know, eye-opening, and it's been an honor talking to so many people that have like the same ideals and same looks at movies that we do. So yeah, NostalgiaCast, that's us in a nutshell.
Yeah, it's a great podcast, and I had a lot of fun talking about Little Shop of Horrors on there. And yeah, it's cool how like everybody just connects with things in different ways, and like the way they look back at these movies from when they were younger. Top Gun, like you said, is a really good example of that. I mean, I didn't really have much nostalgia for this movie. I saw it maybe once or twice when I was a kid, and I just watched it right before the pandemic. They had the, I'm guessing, 30th anniversary. I'm not sure, but it was at the Dolby Cinemas across the country in 2019, I believe that was. Or 2017, maybe, something like that. But that was the last time I saw it. And at that point, it had been at least 20, 25 years. And I didn't remember anything. It was like watching it for the first time. And I don't know, is Top Gun a big one for you?
It is, as far as, you know, we talk about all the time, my mom, like, I was born an only child, and my dad died when I was two. And so she just, as a way of being a babysitter, she would leave me with movies, and and I would sit, and just for 2 hours or 4 hours, and she would rent movies and I could watch two in a row, and she'd know I'd be fine because I wouldn't move anywhere. I'd have like a dream or something like that. But as far as Top Gun goes, that was one of her movies. I do remember seeing it in a theater, and I think I tweeted about this before, but the iconic volleyball scene where we've got everybody like flexing, the Rick Rock Brasovich's Slider when he does his little pose. I remember specifically my mom going, woo, like in the theater. Yeah. And it made me as like a 9-year-old so uncomfortable that I realized that my mom had a libido and like it was kind of an awakening. So I've got kind of a nostalgia for that. So it's always been a movie that's been a part of my, I guess, lexicon, you'll say. Mm-hmm. And then my wife, when we got married, that's actually Top Gun is her favorite movie. We like to joke around about how the makeout scene or the sex scene with McGillis and Cruise, how there's a lot of tongue. Like we watched that a few days ago and there's a lot of tongue. Yeah. And our joke with my wife is that she thought that's how you got pregnant, like when she first saw the movie on video. So I've obviously got some nostalgia for the movie that way. I don't, like, again, you're watching a lot of people like reassess the movie before they watch the sequel, and it's equivalent of hate watching it, where people just didn't connect with it and they felt like the need to nitpick it or make fun of it or rip it to shreds. And I don't get offended by that. I don't get offended by people that like overpraise the movie. I just think it's a fine, as far as 80s go, 80s movies go, it's probably one of the best representative movies of the 80s, where it's all flash.
Yeah.
It's all sensation. It's all dependent on the soundtrack. It's all dependent on the movie star megawatt persona, especially which Cruise was just excelling in by that point in 86. Oh, and it's got the sweaty body. So it's like the epitome of 80s movies. So it's hard for me to get mad at it, because that's what you went to watch in the theaters during the 80s. So like nostalgia, I don't think it's like one of my favorite movies, but it's one that I don't mind. And it's fun to look at, especially the homoerotic stuff. The Quentin Tarantino monologue, if nobody's ever heard that, when talks about, oh my gosh, so funny. And he nails it. He nails it, especially the part with Kelly McGillis dressing like a boy. elevator, and Maverick is all over her. I just thought that was just so funny. So it's, like I said, it's not a movie I get offended by if somebody's going to make fun of it or overpraise it. It just is. It is what it is, and it accomplished what it needed to.
Yeah, I think it is one of the many cornerstones of the 80s. And like, even though I didn't like love it or anything, it's such a big, important part of what like makes the 80s the 80s. Yeah. And like I said, I hadn't like revisited it in a long time. I do remember playing the Nintendo game a lot and how impossibly hard that was. It was like the hardest game ever.
Didn't you have to like connect to a jet fuel carrier and you had to just get it just right?
Yeah, oh, no, man. I didn't do it one time. Like, I must have played that game for months and didn't do a single time. So annoying, but...
Yeah, just mastering the gas up. That's crazy.
Well, let's start getting into some puzzle pieces, and we'll talk about everything that we liked and whatever we think maybe didn't work along the way. But what do you have for your first puzzle piece?
Well, if we're going to, and again, this is kind of a three-way, because I think you might have something that fits into the same kind of category, but... If we're talking, what's the term for it? Legacy sequels? Like, I know it was legacy sequels until about 2 days ago. And then I started seeing everybody on Twitter call it like legacy sequels. And if we're talking about those, we're talking about, you know, Creed. We're talking about Mad Max Fury Road. The latest Scream I would count as a legacy sequel.
Sure.
So the one that I wanted to talk about is Ghostbusters Afterlife. Mainly as... I don't know how to say this. It's like kind of a counterpoint. I know that our mutual friend Jason from Binge Movies loves Ghostbusters Afterlife, and he guessed it on your show, and you talked about that. And I know that you were kind of in the middle on it.
I was a little mixed on it.
So, and Jason was like way up here. I think like your connection. I like Ghostbusters Afterlife. I like to tell people that I'm usually the one as a couple that I get excited about movies. I'm the one that my heart is pounding. I'm the one that goes to see Batman Begins 7 times, you know, in the theater. Sure. And my wife is the one that's usually calm. But like Ghostbusters was such a big part of our lives that when we sat to watch the movie, I was surprised because I was just kind of in the middle of it and I was enjoying it. But she was like giggling at all the jokes and cackling at everything that was happening. So she was like really getting into it. So I think if you've got a really strong connection to Ghostbusters, it works. But I don't know, like if you were to take that connection out of it, I don't know if it works. There's some good stuff with the McKenna Grace and the Carrie Coon characters. That dynamic is fun and it works. Yeah. But as far as depending on and being so relevant or respectful to the Ghostbusters mythos, I don't know if it works if you don't have that connection. I just honestly don't. I get that Jason really likes it and it works for him, and I enjoyed like everything. But again, I just kind of looked at it as, I know what you're doing. I don't know if this works as a movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know your opinion on that. What that does, what the Spider-Man movie did is all the way through, it's just these nonstop like mentions or callbacks to these movies.
Yeah.
And to me, it doesn't really work because I don't want to be, I don't want that. Like, I don't want,
right.
You know, when it has the Bokeem Woodbine character say, who are you going to call? It's funny, but it's like, well, what narrative purpose does this? I need like to be told. So that's layered all through the movie. But what I loved about Maverick is it gets all that stuff out of the way with like the first half hour. Mm-hmm. Like it redoes like the, you know, this is the elite school that they're a part of and they called it Top Gun. And then they have Danger Zone that comes in after the Harold Faltermeyer score is playing. And it does the whole thing that the jet's taken up. It's like an exact repeat of the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then they introduce the Penny character, the Jennifer Connelly character. So you have all these throwbacks and obviously the Miles Teller Rooster character, sure. All that. But what I really liked it. Is that it got all that stuff out of the way within the first half hour. And then it focused and became a story about grief and about loss and about,
yeah.
And then when it does the whole payoff at the, you know, it feels like a movie and not just a legacy sequel, even though it still kind of ties in with those themes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I don't want to sit here and like complain about Ghostbusters Afterlife too much, but I really do feel like it's kind of the bad side of this equation. It's leaning on those things too much, whereas, yeah. And there's certain parts about it that I can't even really explain why they don't work. Like, for example, of course, spoilers all around on this show, but we bring back Ghost Egon in Ghostbusters Afterlife. Here we get Val Kilmer back, and you know, is that the right thing to bring Val Kilmer back? I think almost everybody who watches this movie says yes. Could it be seen as exploitative the way that I see Ghost Egon? I think some people might say yes to that, but for some reason, it all works here, and it just feels like I think because of that story, like you were talking about, there's an actual story being told that all this is in service of, and it's not just, hey, remember all this stuff. That's why it feels like there's some merit to leaning on some of these beats from the original.
Yeah, and you know, it does have that. If there's any fault to this movie, it's that it does rely maybe a little too heavily on that stuff. It doesn't like do the Penny love interest like to the point, oh, do you remember the time? Because they didn't really focus on, like, my wife had to lean over and say, oh, by the way, this is probably the Penny character that they joked about, like with the Admiral's daughters. Oh, okay. I wouldn't have even known. And it doesn't matter because it still feeds into the story it's being told.
Yeah.
I guess you could argue that the Val Kilmer thing is kind of the same as Egon. You're kind of trotting out this actor that, well, not as far as passed away, but his career might be behind him.
Sure.
But I just thought that it, I don't know, you could make that argument that it works for the Egon stuff. It's a little uncomfortable bringing Harold Ramis back, even though I thought they did a good job with that.
Mm.
But the Val Kilmer, the Iceman thing,
yeah,
that stuff, I thought it tied in, again, with that theme of loss and with the theme of letting go. And they just had this nice, I thought it worked as like, if it's been 30 or whatever years, or 40 whatever years since they've been together, they would kind of have more of a connection. I just thought that their scenes together were really sweet, especially if you know that, I think Tom Cruise fought to bring Kilmer in.
Right, absolutely. He definitely did from everything I've read. And I think that's, you know, I think it's great. I think it's a really beautiful send-off for the character. It's probably a send-off for Val Kilmer as an actor. And yeah. I think it's really respectful in the way it's done. I'll just jump ahead to another puzzle piece. Since we're talking legacy sequels,
you
threw it in there in the middle, but I'm going to go with Creed as my legacy sequel puzzle piece. Also a legacy sequel that I think really works.
Yes.
And part of what works so well about it, I think, is how we're focusing on new characters. There's new stories to tell, but we get to know so much more about Rocky in the process, and we get to know what he's been up to. We get to know that there's a life that's been lived since the last movie. And it does a really expert balance of being able to tell a new story and bring you back to this old character. And that's an exciting way to do a legacy sequel rather than just repeating the beats and just resting on that.
Yeah, Creed, it's an argument for Creed or Fury Road as far as being like the greatest, because doing it right, you know, it's Rocky. You don't have to do like another like battle to the finish where he's in the ring. It's just him. It's his next stage in his life. I think that if you were to take the Rocky, this might be controversial, but take the first Rocky, skip everything, maybe two, skip everything right to Rocky Balboa. That's a nice next chapter. See where he's come from. Like he owns the bar and he's reliving his old life. He's dealing with the son. And then you cut and you do Creed. That's a nice trilogy as far as to show the stages of his life. And they do such a good job. It's such a beautifully structured film, Creed is, because I don't know, like you said, it's just, you find out so much more about Rocky. It feeds into, you know, the Michael B. Jordan characters, you know, his legacy he's trying to live up to in his story. And so it's just, yeah, beautifully done. Mad Max Fury Road is the same because it doesn't rely on so much callbacks. It's just another adventure that just happens to be beautifully structured. And again, you know, we chatted a little bit, like I wrote you and I said, do you think that because Top Gun has been, what, it's delayed like 2 years, 3 years? How long has it been delayed?
Yeah, 2019 it was originally supposed to be.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I wrote you and I said, do you think that this movie is getting such high praise because it's come out after all these other legacy sequels that you've seen, like Ghostbusters or Spider-Man, that arguably don't do... I've had arguments with people. I don't know if I count them as movies because they're so tied up in, it's not what I go to movies for. I don't want to go to movies.
Fan service space.
Yeah. That's it's fun, but it's like, well, again, tell me a story. That's not what I'm here for. The fan service doesn't do it for me.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, Top Gun Maverick works that way because once, and maybe it's not as good as Creed or Fury Road because it does have to deal with all that fan service-y stuff at the beginning. But again, the Val Kilmer stuff, as soon as his character passes, again, spoilers if you haven't seen the movie, you know, it's still a movie about loss and about letting go and about like making it to the next step. And so it's just, they're just so beautifully done. If you do it right, I just think that if this movie had come out before, like in 2019, before Ghostbusters, before Spider-Man, I don't know if it would have gotten the same attention. I just think its release is... I mean, it's good. I don't want to, don't get me wrong. It's a great movie. I just think that in retrospect, people looking at all these legacy sequels that aren't working, Top Gun Maverick works as a sequel because it's more invested in story and characters and theme, I think.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I haven't watched Cobra Kai. Are you a Cobra Kai fan? Because that's another thing that was on my mind.
I've watched the first season and we did a short little episode on it because I was just having so much fun with it. What I like about Cobra Kai is that it does all the fan service, but it tweaks a lot of it so that a lot of things are seen from different perspectives. The one I always go to is in the first Karate Kid, Daniel's being beat up by Johnny and his cronies and Mr. Miyagi saves him. It's a heroic moment. Mm-hmm. And then in Cobra Kai, there's a part where Johnny, he's the focus of the series and he's at a gas station. And this kid comes, like, is being bullied and he gets beat up by these other kids. And so Johnny steps in and he saves him. So it's a repeat of that scene with Miyagi. Mm. But then it cuts and you have the Daniel character. He hears that Johnny beat up some kids and he's like, oh, this Johnny is never going to change. But we know as an audience that that's not what happened. So the show does that. And I haven't really got, we've watched the second season, haven't watched the third season yet, but it does the fan service. It's all fan service, but at least it does tweak it a little bit. I would definitely recommend seeing that first season. They're like little half hour bites of episodes. So they go by really fast.
The thing that I just can't imagine, like just a little tangent, but like, what movies from this era are we going to get legacy sequels for in 20 years that didn't already get dozens of sequels? Like, it's so hard to imagine. There's nothing. Like, you know?
Well, would you think this is the next state? Like, I complain a lot about superhero movies just because there's so many of them. And they're so reliant on connectivity instead of, like, I guess the Batman is different. I guess Doctor Strange is different because they're made by actual filmmakers. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen either of those yet, which is, again, it's weird because I think we were talking before, for me to see a movie opening weekend is very rare. So it's exciting for me to talk about Top Gun Maverick. But again, unless you have, I think the MCU is just like a conveyor belt. It just rolls out the stuff and it's the same every time. I'm not trying to knock them because that's what you want. But after, I think the last MCU movie besides Spider-Man that I saw, no, I saw Black Widow because it was just free, but Black Panther was the last one I saw, speaking of Creed.
Okay.
And then I just was like, this is great. I love being told stories.
Yeah.
But I don't want to like have everything retcon that I invest in. So
sure.
I, I'm just wondering, do you think this is the next, like the legacy sequels? Is this going to be like you're talking about in 20 years? We're going to have, like, I don't know, we're going to have Malignant, which you're a big, like a legacy sequel of Malignant. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, is that where we're headed now? Is that the next stage?
We can only hope so. But yeah.
That's probably a bad example because yeah, Malignant is something you want to revisit.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it's, I don't know. We're in a weird moment, that's for sure, with the superhero movies being everything. But that's part of the reason I think we're all so excited about this movie that we're talking about. So,
yeah.
But what do you got for your next piece?
Well, you didn't bring it up first, so I'm sorry if I'm stealing this from you. I know that somebody wrote something on Twitter and you wrote like a puzzle piece for it. I'm going to have to say Star Wars here.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Just, well, obviously Star Wars is a repeat of like, you know, war movies from before because Star Wars is a pastiche. And so they're going to have that.
Yeah.
I just thought like that part where they're training. And by the way, what I loved, I guess we could have picked Top Gun as a puzzle piece, but what I loved about this movie, Top Gun is, again, it's all sensation. It's funny because nothing is really structured. Like it's all about Maverick, like learning to be humbled. Mm-hmm. And then Goose dies and then he's humbled and then he graduates. And then like, oh, by the way, we've got another 10 minutes in the movie. Here's an action sequence we're going to throw in. So it's not, what I loved about this is from the beginning when Maverick is hired or brought on or called back or whatever you want to say, there's a mission that they have to prepare for. And it's all about the mission, all about how the characters are going to qualify. And the mission, again, comes down to diving in the middle of like a ravine, like a crevice or whatever, that's impossible to hit a target. And they're all training to do it. So that just obviously reminded me big time of Star Wars. And again, because Star Wars is a pastiche, I can't exactly look at Top Gun Maverick and say, oh, that's ripping it off, because Star Wars has ripped off so many things.
Sure. It's a big mishmash of stuff. But I watched this movie with my buddy BG, and he leaned over and he goes, bro, they're doing Star Wars. it's Star Wars. And then you could, you know, as far as legacy sequels, you could bring up Force Awakens as well. So, they got the new crew mixed in with the old. So, you know, definitely you got a whole lot of Star Wars in there. So definitely great piece there.
Sorry if I stole one from you.
Oh, no, I'm sure we're going to have some overlap here, especially with all the legacy stuff. I mean, you know, I had Fury Road on my list. I have Creed on my list, you know, but I'll jump to, you said we could have had Top Gun on our list. I'm not going to bring up Top Gun. I'm going to bring up the Mission Impossible series.
Okay.
We got more Tom Cruise just really upping the ante every single time. And he didn't have to with Top Gun. It could have just been like a straight up, you know, older guy returning for this action sequence, you know, but he goes all in with the stunts and the over the top, like crazy, crazy stuff that you do not see elsewhere. And he's really just continuing that trajectory of what he's been doing in the last few Mission Impossible movies, where you really kind of question, you know, is he going to survive these movies in real life? You know,
this guy's got a death wish. Yeah.
it's amazing. And like, you know, of course, you know, with any celebrity, you know, are these people to be celebrated exactly? Like, I don't know, but what he does for movies though is so exciting and so much fun to watch. And the last few Mission Impossibles have been just so incredible. And this is right up there with them.
Well, it continues that trajectory. If you were to look at the Mission Impossibles, I know there are people who aren't fans of two. There are people who aren't fans of three. I think as a consensus, I think we can basically kind of agree that from the fourth one on, it's been just better and better and better.
Yeah.
And so Top Gun does continue that trajectory of being better. It's Top Gun. You know, there's no way to go but up. I don't mean to be negative about that. But and even my wife agrees. It's just there for sensation. It's just there to give you stuff in the moment, but it's not structured as an actual like narrative that builds from the beginning to the end, like this one does.
Mm-hmm.
The Mission Impossibles, you're invested in the characters. What I loved about this one, it does something that I love movies that they do. And again, seeing people when they do reviews of movies, up to the watching Maverick, like the week before, 2 weeks before, people were saying that this is the greatest movie they've ever seen. Mm. Like it was making them bawl their eyes out. And I watched the first half thinking, well, this is fine. Like, I don't understand what, like, it's great. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's not like blowing my mind or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a moment, I don't remember when, I think it might be when the Kazansky character dies, maybe it's the part where Maverick, he's been kicked off the team after Kazansky dies and he doesn't know what to do. And he goes to see Penny and she's like, well, you're not going to give up. You're going to figure out something.
Sure.
And it cuts to the scene where he does the whole mission in 2 minutes and 15 seconds. And everybody's like pumping their fists and everybody's so excited. And that, I think, where it went from good to great for me.
Yes, yes.
And it just really lifted. But it does something that we take advantage of is I didn't realize they were building the characters. They were building the themes in the movie, like we talked about with loss and grief, to the point where when they're ready for the mission and when Tom Cruise takes off of that jet carrier and has the shot of him, like, you know, jutting forward, from that moment on, we're invested in those characters.
Sure.
Because they built them so well. And that's why it's so... It's not just the action of the jet fighting scenes, even though that's very, very good. It definitely has that Tony Scott flair, but with better geography and spatial composition. Because the first Top Gun is just a mishmash of shots. I don't like, there's no continuity from shot to shot.
There's probably only so much they were able to do at that time. So
yeah, absolutely. It's like they shot like 50 hours of footage and just cobbled together what they could. But
right.
I just thought in this one, the choreography and the way it was structured, you could tell where they were, you could tell where they were going, you could tell the angles or other planes and stuff like that. But they built these characters so that you're emotionally invested in what they're going through.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love when movies do that. You know, Fellowship of the Ring does that. You know, a lot of the greats, Wages of Fear does that. You know, you're invested in these people's plights. I just, as far as the Mission Impossible, this is a next evolutionary step forward, like Rogue Nation was from Ghost Protocol, or Fallout was from Rogue Nation. So that's definitely that's an awesome puzzle piece.
I cannot wait for the next one. And real quick before our next puzzle piece here, you know, we're talking about these characters. We should just, you know, mention, I mean, you know, Miles Teller really just steps it up in this. I mean, he's so good as Rooster. Glenn Powell is like a big stand-up here as Hangman. And I would say John Hamm is doing great work as kind of a thankless role as, like, you know, the kind of the asshole. But he really he really sells it and does it well, you know?
Yeah, it's a crown-pleasing, thankful moment. You know, you've got Ed Harris kind of rasping away, like, at the beginning. And just... Yeah. It's Ed Harris, man. He's going to command that screen. Like, if you're going to get anybody, get Ed Harris. And you've got the Bob character. You've got the Phoenix character. They're all, I don't know if they're super well-defined, but you know who they are. You know what their goals are. You know what they're trying to overcome.
Yeah.
It's a great, and again, the scene with Cruise and Kilmer, there's a friendship there. And just the way that they talk, and when Cruz is getting ulterior, I talk about, don't send him out. Don't make me send these kids out. And I was like, Tom Cruise, he always surprises me because I know he does these stunts, but he's a great actor, I think. Like, he invests and he makes you believe, and he can stand up to Philip Seymour Hoffman and Jason Robards. And I don't know, it's just nice seeing him actually get to act instead of just, jumping off of buildings or off of planes, which we love, but.
Yeah, he needs a break once in a while. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
Okay, well, let's see. It came down to two. Like, I'm trying to, are we going to do four pieces or five pieces each here?
Well, I mean, I've got, since we kind of had a little bit of overlap, I've got two more, like, good ones, so.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll talk about this one, because the other one I have behind enemy lines with because again, the part where they get caught behind enemy lines, that's a puzzle piece, but I don't know if I really like that movie. So it did remind me of it, but I do want to talk about, since we brought up Mission Impossible, I want to talk about Christopher McQuarrie and how he co-wrote Edge of Tomorrow. And Edge of Tomorrow, that's my puzzle piece, by the way. It reminds me, it's a very... You know, it's Groundhog Day. Like, this is Top Gun. Like, it's a very, I know what I'm getting, right? But then it does this thing where it twists it and it makes it inventive and it's a fun story. And it's, I don't know, Edge of Tomorrow was just so fun because you expect something going in, but they were able to twist so many things that it was a good, fun, solid experience for me. And looking back on it, I think McQuarrie's been working with Cruz since Valkyrie. Like, he wrote the screenplay. I know he...
Sure, that sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, which is a Bryan Singer movie, obviously. And then, he co-wrote or ghost-wrote some of Ghost Protocol. Obviously, he did Rogue Nation, which is probably my favorite Mission Impossible, just because I liked how it was such a good, solid, straightforward spy thriller after the Looney Tunes cartoon of Ghost Protocol. And then you watch McQuarrie do Fallout, and he's just excelling as a director. Like, the action and the dramatic stakes and the tension of that movie is you're right, it's incredible. Like, people compared Fallout to Mad Max Fury Road, and again, you're walking in going, yeah, right, like, how's he gonna do that? But
sure,
when action movies are defined not by dialogue, but by the actions of the characters and what they do, like Fallout is all about that. Like everything Cruise does is all about his character. When he saves that cop in France from being shot, that's his character. Like he doesn't resort to murder unless it's going to save a human life or something, which is baked all through the movie. I just think McQuarrie, and again, talking about Edge of Tomorrow, I think if it wasn't for him, I don't know if Maverick would have had that human connection that it does. I'm ready to lay all the blame on McQuarrie for that, because we've seen him do it with the Mission Impossibles. We've seen him do it with Jack Reacher. We've seen him do it with, again, Ghost Protocol Valkyrie was, I guess, pretty good. But McQuarrie is just a great writer as far as infusing drama and character and humanity into his movies. So again, it just reminded me that I was just so thankful for that man, that his name was attached to this movie.
Edge of Tomorrow actually is a good candidate for what's the legacy sequel we'll finally get like 10 years from now or something, because it's such a cult classic, and like it underperformed at the time, but I feel like everybody loves it since it's come out. Like it's just so damn good. There's an article in, I think it was on Vulture, that was comparing Top Gun Maverick to a bunch of different Tom Cruise movies. And they mentioned Edge of Tomorrow and said about how is this just happening over and over again at the Top Gun Academy? You know, just the same situation over and over.
They could do that.
Yeah.
Do a crossover. Why not?
I'm down for more Glenn Powell.
Absolutely. Good. He's a fine looking guy. I don't mind saying myself.
Very much so. So I'll go to another puzzle piece. One that is a movie that I've brought up many times on this show as something that I don't like, but I do think it's an apt comparison here. And that's Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk. Okay. A movie that narratively I don't care about any of the characters or really much of anything that's going on, but boy does he know how to shoot some flight scenes and some action in the skies. And I do think that there are some cues that Kaczynski is taking from the way that the action is shot in Dunkirk, and if you're going to take anything, you might as well take those visceral flight scenes and all that kind of sky action.
Right. Well, we might disagree firmly on Dunkirk. I think for me personally, I think it might be Christopher Nolan's greatest movie, or my favorite Christopher Nolan.
A lot of people would agree with you. It's just not for me.
Right. Yeah. And I think the reason for that, again, the characters are hard to connect with. What I loved about, and this might be a huge tangent, but I have to defend Dunkirk.
Go for it.
But it's the way that Christopher Nolan plays with time. You've got the three stories in the movie. You've got the Tom Hardy character, whose story takes place over an hour, is technically what happens. You've got the, on the boat, the Cillian Murphy and the, I forget his name and I hate myself. He's in Bridge of Spies for Spielberg. He was in BFG.
Mark Rylance.
Yeah, you've got that story, which takes place over the course of, I think, a day. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the whole thing with the main characters, the Harry Styles character, whatever, like the teen or the young soldiers. That whole story takes place over the course of a week. Mm-hmm. But what I loved about Dunkirk is the way that Nolan's able to structure it so that you feel like everything takes place at the same time. Like if it's nighttime and that cuts to the next scene and it's daytime, you just assume that, oh, it's the next day, but that's not really what it is. It's still the same scene on the boat, or the scene where, you know, Cillian Murphy refuses to go down into the bottom of the boat because, and he doesn't say why, but then you cut to the scene of them on the battleship and they all go down in the bunk or the below, and then they're attacked or missile attacks and they all drown and die. So I don't know. I just thought that the way that he structured the time was masterful. And just as far as how we watch movies, I remember watching the movie like just gaga for it, because I was like, I can't believe like he's doing this and pulling this off like the way. So it's a different, I get where you're coming from. I don't want to say that you don't know what you're talking about, because you do. Obviously you're the great David Rosen, but you know, I just, that's what I liked about Dunkirk. I do see that the battle sequence, and again, what's great about Dunkirk is it kicks Nolan's like weakness for dialogue out the door. Like it's purely a visual movie. If there wasn't that one scene where you're listening to Branagh talk with the soldiers about the stakes, like that's the one scene where you rely on dialogue to understand what's going on. It could be a silent movie. And watching Tom Hardy, just his eyes, which again, you do in this, Tom Cruise can act the hell out of a scene with his eyes. I do that does tie in, and there's, you know, the booming action. I have a hard time calling Dunkirk action because that makes you feel like you're energized by it. But in war, that's and being energized and being pumped is not kind of how I look at war stuff, but you get what I'm saying. The aesthetics of it is, and I definitely see what you're talking about with Maverick there and how Kaczynski's able to ape those.
One of these days I'm going to revisit Dunkirk and give it another chance. I mean, in the opening, you know, day of watching it, it just didn't click for me. But hearing you, you know, defend it, you did an admirable job there, I gotta say. So,
but hey, like on Nostalgia Cast, we're all about, we never get into arguments. That never solves anything.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Yeah.
We've got, and something that I love about you, something I love about Kevin Brackett, something I love about Jason, you know, all these people and Brian Scuttle. All these people out there, I've never felt that we've disagreed, but we're always able to see eye to eye. Like you and I don't know if we've ever disagreed, but we're able to at least have conversations, and that gets us somewhere. So if you were to watch Dunkirk and not like it, it's not like I'm going to stop talking to you. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's your opinion. And if you're going to give an opinion of a movie, I'm going to absolutely side with you on it, even though my opinion might be different. So revisit it. That's great. I like that I made some kind of dent. But if you end up not liking it still, don't worry about it. I'm still going to respect you.
And I will always be excited for new Christopher Nolan, even if I don't always love his movies. Some of them are really great and some of them are but it's always exciting when a new Nolan movie's coming, you know?
Absolutely. Yep, I agree. So,
what do you got for your next piece?
Okay, so for the final piece, it's going to sound a little weird, and I'm going to have to delve into something that we've chatted about recently, but my last puzzle piece is Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Okay.
And what I mean by this, this is a huge tangent. I know, and I'm going to spoil something for you. So I know that we've just talked and you haven't seen all the Harry Potters, right?
Right.
Okay, so I'm going to spoil something for you. I'm not a big fan of I like the books. I think they're, regardless of who wrote them, I think they're very well written and they're very speedy. And, you know, I don't know if they have a lot of the more problematic stuff that's going on now tied into them. But I don't particularly like those first two movies. I think they're very dry. I think they're like maps of what the books are. It's like, this is you read the book, this is the book. You imagine what the book looks like, this is what the book looks like. The cast is great, but there's no adventure to the filmmaking. It just gives you exactly what you want. Write down, and my big problem with the first two Harry Potters is they both end with a deus ex machina. Thing. In the first one, Harry's about to die, and the bad guy, for some reason, Harry puts his hands on the bad guy's face, and the bad guy's face melts, and he dies. And so Harry's like, okay, well, that was great. And then it cuts, and the Dumbledore character says, oh, by the way, you're able to do that because of love. Like, okay, where was that built into the movie where I thought that was a skill that he was trying to achieve, where he knew what he was doing and used his smarts to pull that off? The second Harry Potter does the same thing. It's down to the end and he's about to be killed by the bad guy, and this falcon or phoenix or whatever, I don't care. It brings in this like this magical sword that Harry's able to defeat the bad guy with. And then it cuts and you have the scene with Dumbledore and he goes, oh, because you were so good at heart, you willed that sword into existence. And again, it's like, why am I investing in a 2.5-hour movie for the hero to succeed without knowing how he succeeds through no skill of his own? He's just got magic powers that he's unaware of. And then I remember specifically, I didn't see Chamber of Secrets in the theater because I didn't care to. But my in-laws took us to see Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban in the theaters because they were really getting connected to it. And again, it's fine. Cuarón gives the movie a lot of life. He gives a lot of personality. I laughed more in the first 10 minutes than I did in the first 5 hours of the first two. So it's great. But it comes to what you think is the end. And Harry's about to die. And then somebody comes in and saves him. And I'm like, all right, this is just the same thing. That was fun. Let's go home. But then the movie stops and it picks up again. And it does a surprise like third or fourth act where they go back in time and they're able to solve certain things. And the moment I realized what it was doing, that it was going to go back and it was going to start revisiting things. And I was just in love from that movie from that second on. And so that's where my love for Harry Potter started, while I'll defend those movies, because Alfonso Cuarón is able to make a movie that I loved and felt like a movie and not just, you know, travelogue or a map through scenes or, you know, stuff like that. So how I'm tying this in is I talked about how Maverick was good. It was good. Like there was, and it built up, you know, when they're going on the mission, it was great. I thought the movie was going to end, number one, when Maverick gets shot down. I thought, because they were building to that, right? Like, I felt like he was going to die. And then, but it pop back up and then he's going to die again. But then Rooster comes in and then Rooster gets shot down and Maverick has to watch it. And I thought, oh, that's where the movie's going to end. Right. But then no, it comes back on and it picks up again with the behind enemy line stuff. And from that moment on, you know, when Cruz goes to see Rooster and he's still alive, I don't know how it was in your theater, but when they're running to each other and you expect them to hug, and Maverick shoves him down.
Yep.
And they have that argument. And he's like, what are you doing? And he's like, you told me not to think. And Maverick can't say anything. It's just huge gales of laughter. It was such a good,
it was wonderful.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Just a crowd pleasing moment. And then when they, well, what are we going to do? And it's like, well, I've got a plan or whatever. And then they go and you can tell what they're doing. They're going to steal another jet. From that moment on, I had my Prisoner of Azkaban that moment where I was like, this is great. Like all of a sudden it went from a good movie to one of the greatest things I'd ever seen in the theater. Sure. Just because of the Falterbeyer Zimmer score. I think Zimmer has a good way of like pulsing or pushing narratives forward that you feel invested in him. And it just makes you feel tense, speaking of Dunkirk. So just that whole ending reminded me of how I was okay and I liked the movie, like I was with Prisoner of Azkaban, when it picks up and it does something else. And then it's about like Maverick and Rooster bonding and them finally getting along and, you know, learning to trust each other. That's where the movie, again, it went from good to, or maybe it went from great to stratospheric because I was invested in that point. It just, again, it just reminded me of that Prisoner of Azkaban moment where I was doing fine, but then something clicked.
Sure.
And then I was just invested. So, wow. Like, I can't tell you the last time a movie did that for me.
That's so awesome when movies do that. And, you know, like you said, I haven't seen Prisoner of Azkaban, but, you know, just bringing up Cuarón, I hadn't thought of this ahead of time, but in my Letterboxd review of Maverick, I said that exhilarating is the word I would use, and I haven't used that word in a long time. Another movie I would probably use exhilarating for is Gravity.
So Gravity, yep.
Cuarón really, he gets that feeling of just like all of your attention and all of your breath is tied up in what's happening on screen and just getting completely sucked in. So, I mean, yeah, he's fantastic. He's such a great filmmaker.
Investment is a word I think we take for granted. I don't... Like Spider-Man No Way Home, I wasn't liking it until Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield showed up. And yeah, it's fan service-y stuff. But the way that they, reading the behind-the-scenes stuff, when they came back in, they were like, we want to make sure that this is worthwhile. It's not just a cameo.
Yeah.
And they have arcs. They both have arcs in that last hour of the movie. And it's, again, it comes down to investment. Like if you were to invest, that's what I look for. Right? You can have all the fan service in the world, but unless I'm invested in your characters.
Yeah.
And the drama that they're going through, you're not going to reel me in. I just think, I'm not going to say that Maverick is the greatest blockbuster of all time, but it is a blockbuster in the finest sense of the term, and that it does get you invested and get you pumped and you want to go see it again, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Maverick is a blockbuster, but another thing that Maverick is, and this will be my last puzzle piece, is a great dad movie. And so I wanted to bring a dad movie into this. I was debating between Ford v. Ferrari and Saving Private Ryan. I'm going to go Saving Private Ryan because, I mean, you know, you can't leave anyone behind. And so especially that whole final sequence, it kind of plays with some of those same feelings and that same ideas there of like having to, you know, have that loyalty and duty to the guys that you're working with, you know, and I'm taking my dad to see this tomorrow at the time of recording, so I'm sure he's going to love it. I'm sure a lot of people are bonding with their families over this movie. You know, it's just great stuff.
Well, I can't tell you how many times. Again, it's going to sound like I live on Twitter. I really don't. But I guess I just find the right... Okay. Well, sure. I do then. Sure. Let's do that. There's no embarrassment there. But I can't tell you how many times I've already seen people say, I've seen it. This is my third time. I'm bringing mom and dad with me this time. Or this is my second time. I brought my dad.
Yeah.
Or I brought my dad to see it the first time and we hugged at the end. It's just that it's a bonding moment. When was the last time, I guess Spider-Man counts because everybody's kind of connected with their love for superheroes and past Spider-Mans or whatever, where you can have Garfield and Maguire and Holland and all have your favorite Spider-Mans like represented on screen. I don't know. I didn't see Spider-Man with a huge crowd, but just, I hope this movie does that. I hope it, like, people go back again and again and just they share with it and they're bringing people because this is, I think it's nostalgia done right. Like you said, it gets all that stuff out of the way first and it sneaks up on you because it's making you invest in characters while you're not expecting it. So by the time, again, Cruise takes off from the boat or the ship, you're invested in everybody's and what they're there for. It works so well that I think we take it for granted. Saving Private Ryan's great because that is it. That whole last part is they're trying to save ideals. They're trying to save each other.
Sure.
You don't know who's going to live, who's going to die. Obviously, Private Ryan for me, I think I'd probably put that as my favorite war movie of all time.
I think so. Yeah, that's a good pick for that.
Yeah, and mostly because like people that were in World War II had experienced that and couldn't communicate what they saw or what they went through to their grandkids or their kids. They went to go see that movie, or their kids went to go see that movie and were like, this is what my grandpa couldn't talk about.
Yeah.
This is why he couldn't tell me about his experiences. And they had, even if the grandpa wasn't alive, they had these bonding moments where they're able to see generations and how they work and how, you know, all the things that we go through. And so that's, even though Saving Private Ryan, it's Spielberg, obviously, it's gorgeously made. It's the whole last scene, it's Spielberg. He can't help make it like an intense, visceral thrill ride, even though it's about people dying.
Yeah.
But more important than that is the fact that people bonded over it because of what their grandparents went through.
Yeah.
I hope Maverick has the same effect. I hope it is one of these big movies that people, again, it's not like it didn't change my life or anything. It's not one of those movies. But as far as blockbusters go, I wish more movies were made like this. I wish more movies were made with the care, even though it has the fan service. I wish movies had this kind of oomph and this kind of personality and this kind of emotion to it that Top Gun Maverick has.
Yeah.
And it's sad that they don't. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it is. And Hollywood only listens to one thing, and that's money. And it's the biggest opening of Tom Cruise's career, biggest Memorial Day opening of all time. So maybe they'll listen and make a few movies like this again.
Yeah, hopefully.
We'll see. I don't know.
Hopefully they won't take the wrong lessons. It's going to be interesting seeing what happens when Jurassic Park Dominion World, you know, whenever it comes out, I'm interested to see how they're going to play. It's something to stack up to. How are they going to pull that off, especially in the wake of this one, man?
I do not envy Chris Pratt and company, but well, I'm going to go ahead and read down our finished puzzle here. We talked about Ghostbusters Afterlife, Creed. We also threw Mad Max Fury Road in there. Star Wars, the Mission Impossible series, Edge of Tomorrow, Dunkirk, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, and Saving Private Ryan. You know, lots of blockbusters, lots of legacy sequels, and just lots of great stuff. I mean, it's a great list of movies here. So
yeah, and not necessarily things that Maverick copied. It's just great things about these movies that are ported over and used for this movie. It's like, man, if all movies were like this, we'd be spoiled, I think. I don't know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think if I have any like closing thoughts on this one. Do you have anything like that we didn't quite get to with the puzzle pieces?
Well, I mentioned Behind Enemy Lines. I was trying to think of movies. I think where the hero is like, you know he's going to die, but he marches into battle anyway. And the closest I could come was another Tom Cruise movie, which is Last Samurai.
Oh, sure.
But not, it didn't resonate as strong. I just thought, well, there are better things that we can talk about besides that. Did I just say this? I like the Lady Gaga song.
Oh.
Maybe I'll just say it twice.
Killer song. It rules. Yeah.
Better than Take My Breath Away, I'm sorry to say. But, you know, it's nice hearing Danger Zone in there. I think we basically covered everything other than Tom Cruise, man, no matter what he does, I wish I could do that. I wish I could. And again, no matter what you think of him, I can't. As long as he's not peddling the stuff that he's like notorious for at me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I know that it's hard for me to watch like American Beauty because all the stuff that Kevin Spacey's, and I try to separate my stuff from it, but it's just, it hits too close to home that it's an uncomfortable watch for me. I can't watch it anymore, you know, because of that whole thing. So regardless of what you think of Cruise or what he does, and I'm glad that we're past that era during Mission Impossible 3 where he basically like torpedoed his career by talking about Scientology
and
stuff. Just that he's able to buckle down, and hearing the interview saying, I only make movies for the big screen, or seeing his intro saying, we've made this movie for you, we hope you have a fun time with it. And it's like, thank you for making like my trip back to the movies worthwhile. Thank you for making this weekend like something that I'm gonna remember. And like, I don't know, sure, the Marvel movies do that. I don't mean to keep kicking them, but I don't know if they do it to this level of like this or Mission Impossible, where it's an experience.
Yeah.
And it's not just going out and eating McDonald's and having a good time eating McDonald's. I don't want to nitpick or kick that stone, but you know, it's not a processed piece of work, even though it's an IP. I don't know. There's so many good things to talk about with this movie, even though it's not perfect like we talked about, but it does so many things right that, I don't know. It's hard not to love it.
How do you feel about this movie as a metaphor for blockbuster movie making? Because that's one thing that I was thinking while I was watching it, is just like, you know, Maverick's this guy who you know, was the best, you know, and they're the military, Hollywood is trying to, like, you know, go forward without him, but, you know, it's just not going to work without, like, a star, a real movie star in the driver's seat to actually, you know, make real blockbusters again.
Well, if we're going to do, like, a bonus to pull in another puzzle piece, if we were to compare this movie to Jurassic World, I know I just talked with Jason. Sorry to keep bringing up, like, other podcasts on your show, cool. Which is great. But we talked briefly about, okay, so Jurassic World it's the same thing. Like, they literally bring out a great white shark, which, again, was the birth of the blockbuster with Spielberg,
sure.
Who made Jurassic Park, who produced Jurassic World. And then you have a big, giant, like, 80 times larger dinosaur pop out and eat the shark.
Yeah.
You know, what is that saying? You have the scene where the Bryce Dallas Howard character and Chris Pratt, Claire and Owen, they're with that brontosaurus, which is an animatronic, which is not CG, and how it dies. That could be a metaphor for how CG is taking over from practical work. So you have all this, but the problem with Jurassic World is it keeps saying, oh yeah, this isn't going to be as good. And then it's not as good. It's like, sure, yeah. Don't do that. Like, don't make fun of yourself and then just be one of those crappy movies.
Yeah.
Be a good movie. I think what Top Gun does, and again, I'm going to keep coming back to it, getting that nostalgia and the fan service out of the way in the first half, it's saying, yeah, that's what this is. But, and we know that it's Top Gun, so it's a very 80s movie. It's not going to, you know, whatever your memories of it are. But we're going to give you a good, solid movie.
Yeah.
This is what blockbusters are meant for. So as an antithesis to Jurassic World, which I don't mind, I just thought that, man, don't make fun of yourself and then just be one of those crappy movies.
Sure.
Like, yeah. Invest. Invest in making this good. And I think that's great. A metaphor for blockbusters. They're a dying breed because nobody really invests or puts this much stock or emotion into movies like this one does.
I'm just loving Jurassic World as, like, the bar band that says, everybody drink up because we suck, you know?
Oh my gosh. And it's true. That's the thing. It feeds into its own narrative. It's
That's awesome. That's great. Well, yeah, I think that does it for Top Gun Maverick. Is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Well, the only thing we watched recently was the Chip and Dale movie, which, again, nostalgia. Sure. I think the jokes work well enough in it. It's fine. Like, it doesn't, don't compare it to Who Framed Roger Rabbit because it's nowhere in the same league story-wise. Mm-hmm. Watch Roger Rabbit again if you want to see how that's going to be done right. And again, it's got the nostalgia for all the cartoon characters that I loved and you loved as a kid.
Sure.
But it's at the behest of a good narrative story. Like, Chip and Dale is likable and it's fine and my kids like it and they watched it a few times and it's not offensive. Like, they don't shove anything down your throat. But like you talked about, it's not really that funny. It's like more brazen than it is hilarious. But yeah, you know, nostalgia wise, you could still do worse.
Yeah. I guess.
You could still be Jurassic World.
Yes, that's true. That is true. You could. Well, awesome. Darren, why don't you tell people again where they can find you and your podcast?
Again, we're at NostalgiaCast. My best friend Johnny and I, we take movies, best friend, childhood friend, we take movies that we loved. I think we're on a hiatus right now because Johnny's moving houses from a starter home into an actual home that they're building. But when we come back, I think what we're going to do for the next season, you're getting the exclusive here, David.
Nice.
We're going to do 90s movies, like strictly 90s movies, movies that we went to go see, movies that we loved, stuff like Forrest Gump or Pulp Fiction or Speed or stuff like that. You know, movies that we were invested in. Mm-hmm. Crimson Tide is another one I've been thinking of. Movies that we loved in a theater. It's not so much like at the end of every episode, we come down to, is this worth remaking? Is it worth remembering? Mm-hmm. I think maybe we're going to jettison that this season and just talk about movies. And, you know, we might be surprised. I might go in and watch, you know, maybe Forrest Gump and figure that this is not the movie that I remember it. And so it is worth remaking or worth not remembering. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we do want to kind of delve into movies that are more popular that maybe more people have heard of. That's what we're going to do next season. So it'll be fun. We want to have more guests on. I'd love to have you, obviously, on to talk about anything.
I'd love to. There's so many movies from the 90s that I watched like the one time opening weekend and just haven't seen it since, you know, so.
Right. But that you remember loving. Right?
Yeah.
We want to go back and do that. So yeah, again, you can find me at DW Lundberg on Twitter. That's mainly where I am. I try to get a Facebook. David, I know you have a Facebook group. Mm-hmm. I know Kevin Brackett has a Facebook, but I can't do it. Like I scroll through Facebook like 3 or 4 times and I'm like, I can't do this.
If there was a magic button I could push to move my group somewhere else, I would do it. But
yeah, and I try. It's just like by the time I can't even get to your group before I'm like, I'm out. Like, so I've got to like reinvest. But I guess that what I want to leave, again, it's an honor coming on here because piecing it together is something I've been listening to for a while. It's great conversational. I don't mean to knock other podcasts that I've guested on, but this whole time since we planned this and since we decided like what time we're going to do this and everything, it's just, I've been looking forward to it. I haven't been nervous. I've been like just aching to talk about this movie with you because piecing it together is so conversational. There's no, obviously you want to prep and you want to know what you're talking about, but we're just chatting movies.
Yeah.
It's not like me to see a movie opening weekend. So that's a big thing for me talking Maverick with you.
Yeah.
I don't usually, you know, get invited on podcasts or have conversations about new movies. I usually talk about old movies.
Yeah, sure.
So it's just, again, I can't tell you how honored I am that you have had me on, or that I roped you into having me on.
I appreciate all of that, man. That is awesome. Such kind words, and it was great talking to you, and I'd love to have you back sometime.
Okay, I'm always up for it. Again, always up for a conversation with people I admire and people that I can chat with and have disagreements without getting into, you know, over a platform or teleconferencing call fist fights.
That's what social media is for. Podcasts are for having fun conversations.
Yeah, just slap at each other. So yeah, that'd be great. Anytime you want to have me back on, I'd love to be back on. This is great. I appreciate it.
Hey guys, this is David, and I wanted to tell you about Newsly. It's an all-in-one audio super app for iOS and Android. And what it does is really cool because, I don't know, if you're like me, I don't have a lot of time for just sitting around and reading stuff. I'm always either driving or doing something, and just to like sit down and read, it's like, you know, who has time for that? And so with Newsly, you could basically turn any web article into kind of like a podcast, and it reads the article in a natural human voice from basically anything on the internet, anything on the web. And this way, you know, you don't have to sit there reading and scrolling. You can listen to it just like you would a podcast. And it's got podcasts too. Piecing It Together is on there. But then you could also find articles from all kinds of topics, from, you know, entertainment and movies to sports and tech and business, science, all that kind of stuff. So really, if it's out there on the web, you can find it and you can listen to it. And I've been using it as my default podcast app, and you can too. And you can download Newsly right now for free from newsly.me. Check out the link in the show notes. It's available, like I said, on Android and iOS in the App Store and the Play Store. And there's a premium version available, and my listeners can get a 1 month free premium subscription by using the promo code PIECINGIT, but all of the I's are ones. So that's PIECING1T, piecing it, but all of the I's are ones. And I've got that in the show notes too. If you're like me out driving around listening to stuff, you can't pull over right now, you can check it in the show notes and find that promo code and get that free 1 month premium subscription to Newsly.
All right. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Top Gun Maverick. Thanks to Darren Lundberg from Nostalgia Cast for joining me on that one. Make sure to check out that Little Shop of Horrors episode. We had a lot of fun talking about that movie. Little Shop of Horrors is so damn good. But yeah, everybody that's out there listening, thank you so much for being there and for listening to Piecing It Together. Make sure you're subscribed wherever it is you listen to podcasts. And if you like what we do here, make sure to rate and review us. You can do that on Apple Podcasts, on Good Pods, on Podchaser, Spotify. A nice 5-star rating would be very helpful, and we would really appreciate it. You can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And don't forget about our Produced by David Rosen Patreon. I told you about it at the top of the show. I'll just remind you, there's a lot of episodes in the can that are just sitting there on the Patreon waiting to be listened to, and will eventually make their way out to the main feed, but you could check them out early. Again, it's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. We do appreciate it, all the people who subscribe to that Patreon. And I'm almost done scoring this feature film right now. Once I get done with it, I will finally be able to get back to work on my next album. And Top Gun Maverick being obviously one of the biggest movies of the year, I figure it's a good opportunity to preview some of the new music I've been working on. So this is a track called Horizon Lines. It'll be on my next album. It's not 100% done in the form that I'm playing it right now, but it's pretty close. I'd say it's like, I don't know, 80% or something like that. So, yeah, this will be on my next album whenever that ends up getting finished. I hope you enjoy it. We will be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
An All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.